is The Lonely Office, your playbook for navigating the messy line between work and life. Our topics are sourced from real anonymous workplace conversations happening within Glassdoor communities, from getting fired for being pregnant, which is insane, to getting hired at a quote-unquote evil corporation. We discuss timely work-life issues so you don't have to brave the professional world alone.
Erin, Leia, have either of you ever inherited money before?
That's the dream, right? Like a great aunt in England who leaves you an estate, but no.
Apparently, we're on the cusp of what they're calling the largest intergenerational transfer of wealth in history, the Great Wealth Transfer.
This is perfect because this fits our anonymous story today.
Who's the hero or heroine?
So it's a hero this time. Let's call him Rich, but he's not rich. He's a 30-year-old screenwriter who's spent 8 years out of college workshopping scripts to break into the industry. I know that feeling. And his script that he's been working on is a sci-fi detective series, sort of a Westworld meets Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
This script has made the rounds with all the streamers and the networks. During this time, he's worked all sorts of odd jobs at weird hours. He lived frugally. He wouldn't even allow himself to get an overpriced latte at the bougie cafe across the street.
That's the most delicious latte.
That's how committed he was. And when things got really bad, he narrowly escaped an eviction notice from his small apartment.
Eesh.
He was willing to risk it all because this was all for his dream. Now, after countless networking events and emails, he finally gets a meeting with a Netflix development exec.
Nice.
Or they express interest in buying his script to develop it into a series. Unfortunately, only a few days later, he gets a call and he finds out that the deal falls through. You think this is going to stop Rich? Not a chance! He says to himself, I've come this far. And he continues the grind.
Nice.
1 year later, Netflix reaches out again. This time, development is definitely happening. The original offer stands, but it's contingent on Rich doing a rewrite in 1 month.
1 month.
Rich summons 8 years of pain and suffering and channels all of that energy into the rewrite. 2 weeks in, he's halfway through. Then something he could never imagine occurs. He receives a letter informing him of a large inheritance from an estranged relative. He cries sincerely, and then he laughs. He doesn't know what to feel. And then he says to himself, what the hell is this, Mr. Deeds? After confirming with the lawyer that the inheritance is the real deal and his financial worries are essentially eased, he returns to the rewrite of the script with only 1 week left before the deadline with Netflix. He decides he's going to go across the way to the overpriced coffee shop and finish the script. He's got the funds now. As he sits down over his steaming mug and opens his laptop, Rich discovers he can't zone in like he used to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He feels like he's missing his normal nervous energy. Where is that normal fire and motivation? He asks himself. The dream he's worked so hard to achieve is almost within reach. But instead of furiously typing away, Rich casually opens a tab on his computer and begins to leisurely browse Airbnb luxury rentals in the Caribbean Islands.
No. What? He's self-sabotage. What's going on?
Rich, don't lose the eye of the tiger.
No,
man.
Not at all. What are you doing? What are you doing,
Rich? Vacation sounds nice. I'm a little bit on his side.
He kind of deserves it.
After hasn't 8 he done
years
enough
of toil?
I'm mad okay at Rich. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm angry.
You're like the angry father. It's like, what are you doing?
It's your moment.
It's your moment. Yeah. It's totally your moment. So, yeah, listen, we kicked off Rich's story with this theme. Americans are in the early stages of what they're calling the Great Wealth Transfer. This is like a massive multi-generational passing down of cash assets from the silent generation and baby boomers to Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. Just to put some numbers on it, according to wealth management firms, the estimated wealth to be inherited by Xers, millennials, and Gen Z through 2045 is around $53 trillion.
Stop.
Yeah.
And
to put that into perspective, that's almost two times the size of our country's current GDP.
Let's guys, I'm hope concerned I'm not going to get any of that. I'm already upset. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
That's a fair point. Definitely, there's a asymmetric distribution of this happening for sure. But let's hope, of course, some of this does make its way to charities. Now, a lot has been written and spoken about the impact of this wealth transfer on our economy, but very little has been spoken about the psychological impact of this money transfer on us in this great chase of an American dream. At the end of Rich's story, there's a transaction he unwittingly made. Just as he gains a financial windfall, he loses that purpose, which drove him so hard to defy the odds and try to become a Hollywood screenwriter in the first place. He's unable to call upon that unspeakable force inside of himself that he's called upon time and time before. It's odd to think, but it's as if he's lost a superpower just as he gained a fortune. Hardship breeds success is an old parable. We all familiar with it, inextricably linked to our concept of this American dream, right? From Benjamin Franklin to more recently, Jensen Huang. Jensen, the CEO and co-founder of NVIDIA, that's the trillion-dollar chip company responsible for powering the AI tools we use, he shared this brutal lesson while speaking to a bunch of Stanford students. And speaking about their privilege, he said, "People with very high expectations have very low resilience. And unfortunately, resilience matters a lot in success. If you want to succeed, you better find some pain. I don't know how to teach it to you, except I wish upon you all ample doses of pain and suffering."
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's brutal to have been in that crowd hearing that. But there's a great redemption logic in this association of hardship and success that makes it so attractive, right? It's like the ultimate underdog triumph story. But there's also an assumption that financial hardship is and will be available to all. I know that sounds crazy. There's no doubt that sounds privileged, because it is. But for those impacted by this great wealth transfer, what happens to their sense of purpose, like Rich? Their will to work, be motivated, and to pursue passions that can lead to incredible successes, like an NVIDIA or even an Apple. That's going to be our topic today. I think to start, we want to discuss this idea of, can a wealth inheritor chase the American dream? Let's look at Rich's case, Rich's story. Is it possible to maintain your motivation when you find a windfall like that?
I think you definitely can. I think Rich's problem is that he hasn't had enough time to process it yet before he sort of like revamps and refocuses his life. You know, when you get any sort of big news, good or bad, you need time to process it. I feel like it's just the worst possible timing for it to happen right when he's up against a big deadline.
Seems like he had enough time to confirm with the lawyers that it was real.
Who wouldn't? But you can see how he's run himself down to the bone. And now he's got something to fall back on. Right. And it's really, really tempting to just take a beat, go to the Caribbean.
Before we dive into some threads and this theme a little deeper, as a creative and a storyteller, I identify with this journey. That's why I'm so mad, because it mirrors Rich's journey where, you know, he put a decade into this thing. And without the help of any money or inheritance, it was his skill set that got him that meeting to begin with, his perseverance, and the fact that he's not willing to close the deal here. I want to look through the lens of creatives who are driven purely from the artistry itself. They're obsessed with the art. That's the thing that keeps them going.
Right.
And then if you do have a series of events that lead to some financial success, the money reveals that you like doing it, you love doing it, or maybe it reveals the fact that you just chose a different lifestyle because you never knew that before. And you realize, hey, Caribbean vacations are a lot more attractive than slaving away
in my kitchen. You're kind of triggering me, because I'm in my head now, I'm in a boardroom with some creatives who we have sold their idea in with just a few small changes. And they're making a big fuss about the creative integrity of an advertising campaign. And I'm like, let's just fucking make the changes, guys.
My point, though, is this is a little different in the sense that this is Rich's original creation.
Totally.
Rich would know if he's selling vacuum cleaners. If he's going to make an artistic concession on a script, the dude's willing to do the rewrite.
That's true. He's doing the rewrite. You're right.
To your question of, does inheritance change, or does it stop essentially someone from pursuing the American dream? I don't think it does from a creative lens. I think there's two people. There's people who would pursue it regardless of money, or there's people who wouldn't
pursue
it. And
I still think Rich is the person who would pursue it regardless of money. It's just, I'm telling you, he needs a beat.
He's scaring me, though. He's on the edge. His story isn't told yet.
You have stories from New York where you've gone through your own series of hardships. And like, I immediately got myself to thinking, what is it about hardship that breeds this resilience? And the reason I ask that is because then that could be an indicator of what you need to continue owning after inheriting wealth, that feeling or those emotions. And so when you go through tough times, what happens in my experience is life becomes a series of like stepping stones, where every stepping stone you reach, you recall that previous like miserable moment and you're grateful that you've surpassed that. And then that leads to the next stepping stone. Another layer of gratitude kicks in as you kind of make your way upward. You have some interesting stories in this regard to share from your time in New York City, where it feels like you can call in a wellspring of difficult hardship stories.
I remember having $3 in my bank account. So I had enough money to pay the MTA card for my subway and then the New Jersey train ride for the month. But I actually had an interview with a theater. It was sort of the opportunity to be an actor and then work within that world. I can get administratively a salary. I could also enhance my career. But I went into that interview knowing that I had no way out of the city.
Right.
Because it was so important to me. I didn't know how I was going to, I was just going to walk over the bridge back home. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I took the chance. I went in there. What's so funny about this is that the person interviewing me worked in the theater, but they happened to be like a trust fund baby, meaning they had a love for art, but they were taken care of, right? And I remember they were late to the interview. And whether I got the job or not, I was okay with. I take my shot. I'd swing. But the fact that this guy was 15 or 20 minutes late and he ended up getting himself a huge latte, he didn't offer me one. And I had to sit there and watch this guy slurp down this overpriced latte. And I knew right away I wasn't going to get the job just the way he was acting. And I realized in that moment, for him, it's just another overpriced latte. For me, it was my whole life on the line.
In that moment.
So there's one quick story for you. So, but I want to actually, can I respond really quick?
Well, just
really
quick. No, you can't, because I want you to continue on this thread. I want you to continue on this thread. What I want to dig in there is it seems like that moment, that story you just shared, you've been carrying that with you. I mean, what is it, a decade old?
Building blocks. That's one of your stepping stones.
I think so, right?
Core memory.
And so is it fair to say that memories like that jog your purpose, jog you back into like functioning and remind you of your purpose when things get tough?
So sometimes I just don't talk at all, but this is where I'm like...
Don't talk at all, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Some more times than others. So the answer is yes. Some people who have those things that define their perseverance. One is hardship. So yes, thank you for that suffering. It helped me build. But if I didn't have that desire to begin with, I wouldn't even have experienced suffering to begin with.
The art in that case was your passion.
It's the foundational element. It's just that the suffering helps navigate the journey.
Right. That's an important distinction we should make between motivation and passion. And I think both of them are commonly like confounded or mixed a bit.
Well, there's a balance, I think, for most people between who knows what the perfect equation is, but of like wins and losses. You've got to have enough loss to sort of build your grit, is what we always call it with our kids. We want them to be gritty. But you also have to have wins sprinkled in so that you keep going. I mean, no one can suffer through constant rejection. At some point, you're going to give up.
Not me.
Even Rich. Fine, Aaron. Jeez.
Right.
Mic drop. But like, you know, he got the interview with Netflix and then he was rejected, but it gave him that glimmer of hope.
Let's kick off with this thread from Gloucester real quick, because I think we're honing on this theme of, again, does wealth inheritance hinder your ability to be productive and progress and be motivated? And so this thread.
I love this thread.
A 33-year-old female. She mentions this in the details. With a $10 million inheritance, I have no interest in spending this money myself, but would like to keep the family tradition of passing to the next generation, my only son. My biggest concern is that this amount could grow quite substantially, and I am worried that giving him too much will have negative effects. A trust is an option, but that also feels controlling. Basically, she's seeking advice from the community. So one advice from someone at Google is, I think it's better to have him aware of that money and put it in a trust that he'll have control over at a certain age. Another one says, if I was your son, I would live the trust fund kid lifestyle I have always dreamed about.
Seriously. If you know it's coming.
Right. The third one, I have never met a trust fund child that wasn't deep into alcohol or drugs. I'm sure everyone has stories that break that truth, but the OP's concern is well-founded. So that's just a perspective there of like, this is a real concern.
I don't know, man. I don't know what my life would look like if I had known that, okay, when you hit 30, you're going to get $10 million. I don't want to be too hard on myself, but I feel like I might have coasted.
It would just sap all the energy, all the energy out of your...
Yeah. I mean, what are you... Because you're working towards something that you're going to get regardless. I mean, maybe if there were strings attached, but obviously the OP is worried about it being controlling, which is fair, but I don't know. I almost feel like I would have been happier if it had just been a surprise.
Here's a comment that echoes what Leah's saying. It's tough to get out of bed to do road work at 5 a.m. when you've been sleeping in silk pajamas.
Oh, harsh. I mean, that's
pretty harsh. Carrying on that thread, I think lottery winners are an example of this. A little different, of course, because in this scenario, you could say it's completely luck and not derived from any work. But there's been a lot of studies on lottery winners, and a lot of those studies document the rates at which they fall into depression or drug and alcohol abuse. One case published in a psychiatry journal found cases of patients who had to be hospitalized for depression after lottery winnings. And what was interesting in this case was that the depression was found linked specifically to that life event of winning the lottery, you know, millions of dollars. In another UK study involving 8,000 lottery winners, one person literally drank himself to death after winning the national lottery. He was an unemployed carpenter and had borrowed £5 from a friend to buy cigarettes and a lottery ticket. These may be considered anecdotal cases, but what you'll see is a lot of these studies that document or follow the lives of the lottery winners, there's a statistically significant amount that's outside of just the mean that actually fall into some level of depression or drug and alcohol abuse. And I think that just kind of plays into this theme we're talking about of losing a sense of purpose when you run into this wealth, and it could impact your productivity.
Though, have you ever watched the HGTV television show? It's called like My Lottery Dream Home. And it's all people who've won the lottery and they're buying their dream home.
I have it. That
because awesome. They all seem really happy.
Maybe they're smiling on the outside and crying on the inside.
I don't think so. They're like, we need 17 bathrooms because I have too many children who use the restroom.
There you go.
Hey, anyway. I just want to interrupt really quick. If you're enjoying this show, please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Just takes
Aaron, yeah. That's asking too much.
A couple seconds. Yeah. Just a couple seconds. Literally two. It actually takes less time than me saying this right now.
5-star rating.
Five-star rating. And listen, we couldn't do this without your support, sincerely. All right, let's get back to it. I don't want to come off as being overly noble because I'm extremely fallible. And I would say that I don't know, because I would say I don't know what I would do either. There would be a huge variable to know that that money was there. I just have a sense of how much I care about the art itself. But Matt, you've had a series of business ventures that have been successful. Maybe earlier on, there were some failures and some things that didn't work out. Right. Like you're asking about the pursuit of the American dream. Like you found some success. Has that stopped you from driving? I mean, you're doing this show. What the hell are you doing here?
Why are you here, Matt?
Even in terms of like your own moments of the glimmers of hope that Leah's talking about, that you had some return on the work and the investment and the debt that you took on early on.
Right.
Has that stopped you?
Yeah. I mean, I opened up this idea of like stepping stones. And I mentioned that because that's the way I've experienced life in many ways from a career standpoint, where I've had a number of stepping stones that reinforced the idea that a lot of the hardships that I had gone through in New York City, for example, when I transferred there and didn't have much savings at all, you know, people had far worse than I did, but on a relative basis, I did have to scrum a bit. And each time I found some relative success, that was a stepping stone. It was a reinforcement like, oh, okay, this is going to pay off and this feels pretty good. And I don't want to go back to, you know, the dollar menu at Wendy's or whatever it is. And so I definitely kind of experienced that way. At the same time, I think there is something to what you said, Aaron, which is passion versus motivation to become rich, right? And I wanted to comment on this. So, you know, since then, this hustle mania has kind of emerged. We're all familiar with hustle culture.
Yeah.
And we all have these come up stories that hit our feeds, everyone from tech billionaires to influencer millionaires. And it's really hard not to make like a direct association linking their success with any suffering that they made. Even the phrasing has changed, right? Like you don't work hard, you grind. It's like the word work is just too joyful to use to serve its purpose. You know, we've latched onto a masochistic work culture, and it's not pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but it's self-flagellate yourself into shape. And back to the point, what all this hustle mania misses the mark on is that it's not motivation that fuels the pursuit, it's passion. Any motivation to become rich almost always sputters and dies. But again, in my experience, having the passion to try to self-actualize some vision that you have of yourself, that's what breeds the resilience that Jensen at the top mentioned. the resilience to kind of continue.
While you were talking, I was thinking about the tech startup founders who came from really wealthy backgrounds, like Benioff, who keep going. Like they sell a company and they're off to the next thing.
I think it points to the ultimate drive with individuals like that who are driven or motivated or maybe have the passion, even if there aren't constraints to begin with, meaning even if they have a privilege to start, they're going to eventually come against an obstacle. My point is that on that continuum, there will be some point in which they have to suffer.
Because they're driven to create or succeed or whatever it is, but they don't have to worry about working at a diner.
That's right.
Like Rich did.
Right.
They can focus all of their energy.
Wealth doesn't shield you from suffering. And if we're calling on these popular iconic examples as we are, Musk has been mentioned before, and I guess it's been verified that he would sleep on the car factory floor. Here's like a billionaire sleeping on the car factory floor. And if you believe his words, you know, he thought he would die during that time while he was trying to build Tesla, and he was worth billions, right? At least at some point during that time. And so some of these folks, some of these entrepreneurs, some of these professionals you read about have trained themselves to endure. And I wanted to bring up this point, a perfect example of this. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this guy, David Goggins.
David Goggins.
So a very popular motivational speaker, maybe the new age Tony Robbins. But David Goggins is a retired U.S. Navy SEAL, and he's like an ultra marathon triathlete known for his extraordinary physical endurance. He has this proverb that you need to callous your mind against hardship in order to build resilience. He does these extraordinary feats, everything from just running insane amount of miles to putting his body through all sorts of
He pushes the envelope.
Contortions. Yeah. You do this by intentionally exposing yourself to physical hardship and suffering within limits in order to condition not just the body, but the mind. And so from that vantage point, if you adopt this philosophy, you've calloused or you're trying to callous your mind against hardship, then, you know, even with tremendous amount of wealth, you're still suffering some relative doses of suffering along the way. You know, it might pale in comparison. You're not dying from hunger, right?
Yeah.
In a world where there is. But that's not what we're talking about here. You're still
the base of your pyramid is still fulfilled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You reminded me of this article. I just found it on the New York Times. It was from 2007 and it really stuck with me.
Wow.
But over the last 30 years, the citizens of Denmark have scored higher than any other Western country on measures of life satisfaction. And scientists think that this is because Danes continually report lower expectations for the year to come compared with most other nations. And so year after year, they're pleasantly surprised to find that things are going well. They're like, oh.
That's what Jensen was saying, right? It's exactly what he said about the Stanford students. And, you know, under promise,
and Stanford students probably have very high expectations for their own success, for their own lives. And then when those expectations aren't met, if they're working on a project at McKinsey and then they screw up, I'm not speaking about anyone specifically, but maybe I am. They're so devastated by that small mistake that it's like, come on, pick it up. Let's keep moving. We don't have time for this.
We talked before, like the number of immigrants responsible for most of the valuable startups and innovation in this country relative to Native Americans, unicorns. And that's the same kind of premise at play. They have lower expectations to start, certainly many of them coming to this country with less means, financial means, and maybe just even less expectations as a result of them not born to this education system and not born to having gone to a top 10 college or top 20 college. I think that's why Jensen's quote was making the rounds, because it's resonating with a lot of folks.
You both made comments about the lottery winners. This is more of a callback to the Ikigai theme we've talked about in previous episodes. If you want to go back.
The Ikigai.
You mentioned that it was the event that they cited that led to the depression. I think the event is actually the revealing. See, I think what happens is when that windfall happens, it reveals the fact that underneath your driver, maybe it's not a passion.
There you go. Rich's passion is really not to be a Hollywood screenwriter. Based upon what you're saying, Aaron.
He's dancing around that possibility. I don't know. I think it's, we don't know. But we'll see if he closes the tab and calls Netflix and finishes it to get to that deadline. Otherwise, enjoy the villa, man. Which he might. He might have a great life. He might, like you said, those lottery winners are buying their favorite homes.
Such a good show.
When you think about routes to find purpose to fill the void, if things turn out as we're discussing and there's this great wealth transfer that happens and that you're fortunate enough to be amongst those inheritors. And we should emphasize that the statistic is that the top 10% of households in income are the ones that are going to benefit the most from this transfer. So as always, there's asymmetric distribution of this wealth, and there's going to be a lot of folks left out in the cold. And that's a larger problem. And hopefully a lot of this money finds its way into charities and social projects and other good sources. But for a second here, let's entertain the premise that you are one of these inheritors of some relative wealth. What do you do to continue to find purpose to fill the void so that your motivation doesn't wane like Rich? What I found interesting is there's an entire industry dedicated to this. So there are private wealth management firms for the ultra wealthy, and they're dedicated to providing families that achieve great wealth with programming and consulting to help them and their kids manage goals and expectations so that they can live, you know, fruitful lives. And I read one of these reports by one of these better known firms, and I found an interesting point, which is the conditions under which Generation X and millennials will be inheriting this wealth during the Great Wealth Transfer are considerably different from those of previous generations. And they just highlighted some of the points, which are all like the greatest hits of The Lonely Office. They talk about uncertain economic conditions caused by COVID, you know, the remote working. They talk about AI. They talk about student debt. They talk about housing crisis, all stuff really specific to our generation, Gen Z millennial. And then on the social condition side, they talk about there's also differences there too. You know, this generation, our generation, we're delaying life milestones far more than others. Marriage and family building a lot later than the boomers and the silent generation. We also care about material things like wealth differently, frankly, than other generations. If you just need to prove that point, just look at the percentage of Gen Z and millennials that own crypto. The point is that we just care about things in a different fashion. And so with all that in mind, I could kick it off with a comment here from Glassdoor. It goes, okay. Why am I not satisfied even after achieving my goal? Why do I feel like there's something missing? I worked hard and I struggled a lot to achieve my goal, but finally after completing it, I feel empty. And the comments are here. I feel this happens to many of us. This is happening because the things you achieved were not your actual calling. You are seeking something which gives you peace. Maybe your subconscious doesn't enjoy materialistic pleasures and derive from your achievements. Your passion versus a goal or motivation to get rich was the crux of the answer here.
The first question I would have to Rich, would you continue to be a screenwriter even if you didn't have the money?
Yeah.
He did it with eviction notices. He did it. So the answer is, would he do it even if he didn't get paid? Yeah, he did. The second question is, you had cited the immigrants being really productive. Are those families after money? Or was the driving force love of their children?
That's fair.
Oh, okay. Yeah. American dream.
You asked me directly, and I feel like I didn't answer the question, but let me answer that now, which is having achieved a relative amount of financial ease after selling my two startups, I do have to admit that one of the drives is to continue to provide for my family beyond, let's say, the savings and the finances accumulated. And, you know, part of that is built upon going from a level that's like enough to kind of sustain this generation to like maybe there's enough to sustain the next, as crazy as that sounds. And on the one hand, it's selfless. On the other hand, from an evolutionary standpoint, it's kind of selfish, you know, providing for your breed. And I think it's important because amongst the points that these private wealth management firms make, and they've studied this phenomenon with ultra rich families, philanthropy is a big thing, trying to reset, recalibrate what your sense of enough is enough is really important. Back to what you just said, I do feel like that has been somewhat of a driving force for me.
And as someone who's watched a lot of My Lottery Dream Home on HGTV, which has not sponsored this podcast, but maybe should, a lot of the people who are on the show have won enough money to say, make a down payment on a nice house, but not what you would call like F you money. Like, okay, I can take a sigh of relief, not in a, I should just blow everything up and change my whole world. There's a distinction there as well for Rich. I don't know exactly how much he's inherited.
That plays directly into something we've talked about a number of times on this show, which is keeping up with the Joneses. And you know, we had a whole show dedicated towards the transparency of people's financial situation via sites like Zillow and Glassdoor being a player here.
Forgot about that one.
In salary comparisons, for example. And so there's this sort of like money dysmorphia, is a term I came upon recently, that is getting worse with all the attention, where in the past it used to be the lotto winners. On the daily news, back in old television news days, they would cover the lotto winners. But now it's literally by the hour in our feeds, And all this attention is being paid to the new lotto winners, the entrepreneurs who exit for big money. And
but
on the
also
one hand,
just random people with like Hermes collections. I'm like, are people just in massive debt? I'm so confused. There can't be that many people with that much money.
I don't think so. There's a bit of dysmorphia there. And just a personal anecdote here, there's a well-known tech entrepreneur, Andrew Wilkinson, and I actually love his content that he shares. But it occurred to me recently, the name of his newsletter, which I read on occasion, is called Never Enough. It's called Never Enough. I don't know if I philosophically agree with that. There is a point at which enough is enough. And I think this constant drive, never enough, is exactly symptomatic of what we're suffering right now when we read these stories and inundated with these narratives of these entrepreneurs who hit it big. And it's just not real, right? It's definitely not happening at that scale. The comparison we're making is not the right comparison, so to speak.
Backtracking slightly to the private wealth managers who are sort of building structures for how to make sure that your kids still have motivation and are decent people when they're about to inherit a massive amount of money. A lot of that setting of that framework falls with the parents, right?
That's right.
I mean,
that's absolutely right.
I'm thinking of one friend whose parents run a business who's super motivated on their own. And I think it's just because of how they raised their kids. That's a trust fund baby. You wouldn't know they were a trust fund baby unless they'd mentioned it to you because they're working super duper hard.
That's exactly what they do, Leah. So they actually come in on the parental side, and a lot of the consulting and suggestions they have deal directly with the parenting style and how you provide, how you communicate to the child, how you set about like goal expectations. So yeah, it definitely hits on all those points.
Rich's story is the reason why I was so geeked up to not only tell it, and clearly we have fun with it always at the beginning. We find the humor, we over-dramatize it. I love that because it just gets
us
excited.
Do we over-dramatize it or do you?
Okay, I do. But you know what though? Humor is an entry point to very real stark questions. And I think what Rich's story did for me was to re-examine the question about how we look at our American dream or the experience. If you can open that mind, then you realize there actually isn't a finish line. What Matt said was just,
are you never enoughing?
I always think that there are no finish lines. They're just stepping stones. And so I think that's when there isn't depression.
Right.
That's when you go, oh, that was great. It's the end of this stage. Now I'm at a new thing. That fills the deficit. That will provide Rich the opportunity to go, God, that villa looks good. But you know what? I got to follow this thing because it's so important. When we only look at the American experience as a one-dimensional experience, when you hit the jackpot, then you're like, well, it's over.
Right.
Fine.
It's
sad.
I agree. That's why it's reassuring to see like people like Warren Buffett, who's almost, well, is he into his 90s yet? It's hell of a stepping stone he's on at this point, but like he's still pursuing what he's pursuing for the love of it. One quick anecdote here to play towards the cultural point. And this is from my time at MTV. One of the nadirs of my career at MTV was when the show Sweet 16 came out.
Oh, gosh.
And this show, if you're not familiar with it, you could probably go to YouTube and just see it. It basically documents these extravagant Sweet 16 birthday parties for young girls. What I quickly recognized, and a lot of people at MTV at that time recognized, is that its audience actually, its main audience for this were Midwestern girls. Mm-hmm. Kind of the exact opposite. The types of families, the type of children who don't have the financial ability to have these lavish birthday parties. You can imagine the type of dysmorphia that would cause where they would go to their dads asking for this extravagant birthday party and now they have to deal with it, right? And it's just sad. And I think beyond sad, I think it was harmful. And what occurred to me then is like after I'd left MTV, and I feel like a lot of my colleagues at MTV felt the same way about that show and some other shows on that network. But you have a version of that just every day in our social media feeds.
Yeah.
Facebook is by no means any different. I don't care if it's algorithmically powered or produced. It's the same content, the same type of dysmorphia that it's feeding. I think culture has a role to play here, as always. We talk about the show in kind of feeding the way we think about this. Some level of realism, having the right configuration level for where you're at in life. That's probably the best thing you can do for yourself.
Like a happy counterpoint to that, Matt. Ruth Gotsman, did we all hear about her? She donated her inheritance of $1 billion of Berkshire Hathaway stock.
To the hospital.
Yeah, Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx. You don't know. Rich might decide, hey, he's going to donate to Savannah College of Art and Design. Who knows what he's going to do once he takes a step back.
Real quick, Rich, he's got his finger on the computer. He's looking at villas. he might lose the drive. Any advice for Rich? And what do you think plays out?
Yeah, just two pieces of advice coming from the experience I've had as an entrepreneur. You want to marry what you love with what makes you money. We talked about this concept of ikigai, where you add two more dimensions to that of what you're good at and what society needs. But in general, if he finds that his motivation is waning for screenwriting, then maybe that's not his passion. So put yourself somewhere where you actually love what you do and can make money. And the second is allow the wealth to become a tool to become whatever you want to become. The wealth is no longer the end. It's just a means to become whatever you want to become. And that really just opens up the horizons. Maybe he now wants to become a director and he has the funds to seed, invest, and capitalize that mission.
Leah, final word.
Okay, this is how I see it playing out. He's got a week to go. His agent calls him and is like, what's happening? What's the status? And that's going to trigger him to just get in there and get it done. I don't think he's going to give it all away, but I do think, to Matt's point, he's going to use it as sort of a safety net so that he can actually achieve his artistic dreams. And I think he should at some point book that villa and take a vacation because he's earned it.
I love it.
We should all consider this somewhat of a parable. Success isn't just because someone's worked harder than everyone else. Sometimes the universe throws you a bone and you're just lucky. Some successful people are just lucky.
That's fair.
Hey, you made it. Thanks for tuning into The Lonely Office. If you like what you heard, follow us on all major podcast platforms so you don't miss an episode. And make sure and tap 5 stars and leave a review. I know everyone says it, but it actually helps others like you discover the show. Remember, the topics you hear us talk about on the show are sourced from Glassdoor communities, where professionals are having candid conversations about their careers anonymously with others in their industry. To be part of that conversation, download the Glassdoor app. And when you're in the app, make sure and join the Lonely Office Bowl. That's where we are. When you're there, you can suggest a topic idea or an episode idea, or you can make it more formal and email us at thelonelyoffice@glassdoor.com. We'll catch you next time.